listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at the Original Mother's Nightclub in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Ry, the movie guy, and this week on Cinema Jaw, Matt, we go behind the bars and take a look at our top five favorite prison movies.
It's a good Valentine's Day top, Ry.
Well, you know what? V-Day is only one day out of the year, and then after that, no one wants to care about romantic comedies.
No. Well, there is the sweetest day in October, right?
I mean... Not enough. Can't sell me on that.
Hallmark trying to sell greeting cards. And
prison movies is guys movies, you know what I mean? There's a lot of good guy films that are prison movies.
Sure, there's not too many chick flick prison movies. That's a safe assumption there.
And it was fun doing the research, how many great prison movies there are. There's a bunch out there, and we're going to be listing a bunch ourselves.
Yeah, I stuck pretty classic on my list, so...
Good to hear. Besides that, we also have theater reviews for you. I caught A Separation, and also We Need to Talk About Kevin. We have a Cinema Jaw poll question, and we have an awesome, awesome guest that's going to be joining us.
No, Chicago radio legend, media legend, James Van Osdell. Osdell. Jeez, I did it on the podcast. Osdell.
Yeah, he's going to be joining us very shortly via Skype, and he's going to take you on in trivia. He has his list of five best prison movies. Plus, we got a cinema war that's going to take a look at Denzel Washington. It's a jam-packed episode.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. It's 101.
It's amazing. 100 folks downloaded. It was awesome. Did a whole live segment, so it's already on our website and also on iTunes.
Yeah, and still now nursing the hangover.
And now we're triple digits here with 101. I love it.
Triple digits.
So let's get right to the show, Matt.
Yeah.
Let's bring in our guest, James Van Osdell, via Skype. Am I saying it right, James?
Dear God, yes, it's me, James Van Osdell. How are you? Big fans.
Yes, welcome to Cinema Jaw.
It's really not that hard of a name to get right. We're just like legendary at butchering names on Cinema Jaw.
Listen, I've spent decades of hearing my name get butchered since grade school. It's fine, and it's an honor to have you two butcher it.
Oh,
thanks, James. So we're excited having you on. You've been around the radio stations here in Chicago for a long time, since like 1993, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah. I'm not in radio anymore, but you know, I didn't leave all that long ago. But yeah, that's how long I've been doing it.
And most notably, especially our listeners here in Chicago, would probably recognize you from Q101 as your mainstay, would you say?
Yeah, I worked there for 11 non-consecutive years, but I worked there longer than anywhere else, obviously.
What exactly, like, you know, I saw that in the bio, non-consecutive. Obviously, I remember Local 101, but I can't really remember a time when it wasn't on. So what's the story behind the non-consecutive?
Well, I left the station at the end of 2000 to go work for WXRT. I was their music director, and I came back to Q101 in 2006, and they fired me about... year and a half after that, because they were douchebags.
Yeah.
And then I started doing some part-time stuff for them back in 2009. So three different stints, two times I left by choice.
But would you say that was your favorite radio station that you worked at, or was there another one in there that you liked
anymore? Well, that's the one I have the most memories attached to, sure. I mean, there are different wonderful things I experienced at XRT and at The Zone, but I certainly spent the most time and did the most at Q101. So yeah, I would say yeah, sure.
Going back to your college days, did you know right away that you wanted to do DJ and get right into that? Or was it like you were into rock music or more in just in radio in general? What drove you, I guess, to become a rock DJ?
See, and that's a great question. I wanted to go into radio, but it wasn't because I wanted to hear myself talk on the radio. I went into radio because I love music. I wanted to find a career where I could play music and talk about it. That was it. I mean, and there's a really clear difference, and I'm glad you mentioned this because there are the guys who go into radio who just love being radio personalities. They love to hear themselves talk. They'll do their radio show, then they'll go home, they'll listen to their air check, which is the recording of their show, in their car on the way home. I don't know, man. I just got into it because I like music, and I found a way to make that a career for a while.
Yeah, that's awesome, because that show, that Local 101 that you did, was really a highlight of finding like local music here in Chicago. And I think that's such a treat, putting that out to the fans and having fans discover music because of the position you're in.
That was the best. Being able to have bands send me music like, hey, we just recorded this, will you listen to it? And what a great gig. I mean, it was the coolest, and I could find music that I thought people would want to hear, or you know, that they should at least be aware of, and put it on the radio. It was a really cool thing to be able to do. I felt very lucky.
Yeah, that is so awesome. I'm a satellite radio guy myself. I listen to like XMU, and they do a lot of like new music that way. And I always feel like I need a DJ to inform me of the new music that's out there, because I'm lazy if it wasn't for them.
Well, and see, that's just it. There are a lot of ways to get music now, and more than I've ever known in my lifetime. But at the end of the day, it's still helpful to have someone who can help you curate all that stuff, who can sift through, someone, a trusted voice, someone who can kind of guide you in the right direction. And that's when radio does its job right, that's what it can do. It often does it wrong, but when it does it right, that's what it does.
There's no doubt that there's a huge hole in the Chicago radio scene right now. There's no rock station. I mean, of course, we have XRT. As far as alt rock and local rock especially, there's nothing, man. It's a hole.
Let's be clear. Q101 made a lot of mistakes over the years, and I wouldn't say it was a great radio station when it got taken off the air. But you're right. I mean, when you think about some of the bands that Q101 played, whether it's Tool or Metallica, Nine Inch Nails, these are bands you can't hear on the radio anymore, which is astonishing to even think about.
It really is. I mean, there's somebody's going to come along and fill that gap, but who knows? Who knows?
This is Chicago. It's the Midwest. It's a rock city. You would think.
You would think. I mean, it's mind-boggling. But going on to some of your other accomplishments, I was reading that you had a couple of books, or at least one book that's already out and then one in the works.
This is true. I put out a book myself last year called Off the Record Collection. It was just that. It was a collection of music-related writings I did in my blog over the past few years. And it was an experiment more than anything else. I wanted to figure out how to self-publish a book, what's involved with that, and put it together start to finish. I learned a shitload from doing it. And this next book, which I'm currently working on, is called We Appreciate Your Enthusiasm. It is the oral history of Q101 from its time on the air as an FM radio station, as an alt station, 1992 to 2011. And I've talked to about 80 different people for the book, and I'm piecing together slowly but surely the narrative of the station.
That's awesome. You know, it was cool when Q101 was going off the air, or they didn't technically go off the air, but we're changing over to the new format. That last week on Q101 was some of the best programs they had on, listening to some of the old DJs, telling the stories. And I think probably me and Matt, both sort of growing up our teenage years, at least for Matt, me my whole life here in Chicago, Q101 played such a vital role in my teenage years and college years.
Yeah, that last week, I really would like to believe that radio programmers would learn a lesson from that week. It was honest radio. The people on the air didn't think about what they were doing. They weren't told what to do. They just did. They just went on the air. They played music they liked. They actually picked the music they played, which doesn't happen in radio, which is another issue entirely. But they were very forthright, and they really did another thing radio should do, and that's engender a sense of community. I really felt like they embraced the community that supported them for the years, and they really kind of gave back. And it was a nice dialogue between what happened in the studio and what happened out in the streets. And of course, you know, they went away, and radio like that is impossible to come by now.
Yeah, you know, it's dead, which is a perfect segue to the next question I was going to ask you, which is you recently, very recently, actually announced that you're going to be a part of the Steve Dahl Network, which is pretty notable in the podcast scene as a premium podcast. I mean, Steve Dahl is doing, well, he's living the dream, I guess. He's actually charging successfully for podcasts, right?
Yeah, so you got a monthly subscription to Steve Dahl, which also gets you Kevin Matthews shows, I believe, also as part of the network. Is that correct?
Yeah, you get two radio legends and me.
Yeah.
Nicely done.
Listen, I love the network idea. I mean, I realize that it's different for some people, the idea of, you know, paying for a podcast. But I think the more voices and the more variety Steve puts into this, I think there's a real value. And these guys can't be heard on Chicago radio anymore. And I think Steve especially does such a unique type of radio. And he is the archetype of that type of talk radio. And I think it's a really special thing he's assembled. And I'm just lucky to be playing in the sandbox. I think it's a really cool thing.
And, you know, what we were saying earlier, actually, where we were talking about the DJs being important to listeners, letting them know what kind of new music to listen to, I think that's what sort of Steve Dahl's doing by putting this network together. These are the podcasts that Steve Dahl knows his listeners would appreciate, and that's what you would get by subscribing to Steve Dahl's network.
Steve turns in a 90-minute show every day. There's a ton of preparation. He's got a battery of people who work for him and help him, you know, prepare for the show, do technical stuff. I mean, it is topical and it's honest, and it's just Steve being Steve. And that's what I grew up listening to, is, you know, Dahl on LS and The Loop. He's putting in a radio show. It's just not heard on terrestrial radio.
And tell us a little bit about your show that's going to be on there. You're doing it once a week, I believe, right?
In theory, it's once a month, but I want to do more than that. It's up to me, basically. I've already done one show. I interviewed Paul Adelstein, who is on ABC's Private Practice. He plays Dr. Cooper Friedman. He's a former Chicago guy, actually. He's been in a ton of movies, movies that you probably talked about at one point. He was also in Prison Break. And next week, I'll be talking to the Chicago band Janus. I'll be talking to Butch Walker, producer and musician, in a couple weeks. I'm talking to some comic book people down the road. It's just me interviewing people.
I'm glad you brought up comics. Actually, this is one of the last points we want to hit before we get into the show, the meat of the show. There's a connection.
Dude, this is the meat.
This is well, of course, this is the meat, James. I mean, as soon as you're on, it's the meat.
Right. I bring the meat.
Nicely done. But yeah, so there's you're a big comic book nerd like me.
See, I reject the word nerd. Okay. I love comics. Always have. I can't draw that line. It's what I like. I think it's cool. I think. The idea of nerd culture being separate from the rest of culture is bullshit. The Avengers is going to be one of the biggest movies of the year. That's not a nerd thing. It's going to be one of the biggest cultural events of the summer.
I agree 100%. Rye would disagree.
Yeah, well, I'm not a big Avengers guy. I'm not really huge into comics as much as I am just movies in general. But James, what movie are you actually looking forward to more, Dark Knight Rises or The Avengers?
That's an easy one, The Avengers.
Yes!
I'll tell you the truth.
Nicely done.
I did not like The Dark Knight. I thought it was awful.
Wow.
Ooh, wow. Really? You gotta explain
that's
this
harsh,
one, man.
James.
Yes.
That's harsh.
It's true. I didn't like the character of the Joker. And
what?
I thought they made two movies into one. I thought it was torturously long. I thought they forced two stories together, the Two-Face story, the Joker story. They didn't need to overlap. It didn't do it for me. And here's the problem with Batman in the movies. Let's think about the character of Batman. He is a billionaire. He was trained in the mountains by ninjas. His headquarters is a cave where he creates super weapons and pilots these fantastic vehicles. I don't want verisimilitude with a character like that. I mean, come on. How realistic do you need to make a guy who is trained by ninjas, who has a utility belt with, you know, gas pellets and grappling hooks? He's Batman, for fuck's sake. You don't need to make this, you know, someone you'd find on Lower Wacker Drive.
True.
I don't know.
I like those points.
You know what? I agree and I disagree. I see where you're going with this, but at the same time, the other end of that scale, the other end of that spectrum is Adam West camp, which for as much fun as that was, I think the Dark Knight, like respecting the tone of Batman, which is definitely a dark tone, is better than the camp.
I would take the Adam West 1966 movie with the Joker, Riddler, Catwoman, and Penguin over The Dark Knight.
Wow.
I would watch that any day of the week over The Dark Knight.
You are out on a limb, sir.
You heard it here first. That's big words by James.
I think The Dark Knight is Radiohead or Wilco. People want to say they like it. They're not sure why they like it, but they think they should. But in reality, when it comes right down to it, they're not whipping out the Wilco CDs in their car. They're playing Blue Oyster Cult.
No, I don't know about that. My dad liked Dark Knight.
I'm a big Radiohead fan.
Yeah, he's the music nerd. So, yeah.
All right. Tell me what you like about the Hail to the Thief album.
Well, Hail to the Thief, I really actually love all Radiohead, so I can't say that there's one thing in there that I particularly don't like. Radiohead, just overall in general, I think, are sort of just in tune as far as the band in general. Like, they're never, like, doesn't not make sense as far as, like, a curve of the album, and that doesn't go. Nowadays, it seems like there's always, like, just singles pop up here or there. Radiohead, it's constantly, like, a whole album. You put the Hail to the Thief on, start to finish, it's beautiful.
It's a concept from beginning to end. I actually like Radiohead, too, and I'll take the question. I think Hail to the Thief, was that the first one that they crowdsourced, that people can pay what they want
yes.
to get the album?
No.
See, now that's cool. They're pushing
forward. Oh, no,
that
was in Rainbows, maybe.
Okay, maybe it was in Rainbows, but at least it's the same band. They're pushing forward in new media. They're trying new things, new models for distribution and whatnot. I respect them for that, if nothing else. Like, their music aside, just what they've done with new media, which I think is incredibly important, makes Radiohead very relevant. But we are so off topic,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, this is a movie podcast.
We got to talk about prison.
Talking about Batman.
Yeah.
True, James. We always like to end some of the guest interviews with some goofy questions. Knowing that you're this heavy rock sort of legend here in Chicago, you see a lot of great shows. Also, can you think of one of the smaller shows that was just sort of epic that you remember seeing that you want to give us a memory of?
Like of all time?
Yeah, here in Chicago.
I'll tell you probably the single greatest show I've ever seen in my lifetime. It was 1988 at Metro. It was Iggy Pop on the Instinct Tour. Wow. It was a time in 1988 when there was a string of just brutally hot above 100 degree days in Chicago. It was about 1,000,000 degrees inside Metro. The walls were sweating. It was disgusting. And Iggy Pop just ignited the room. Just he's this twisted, sinewy mess of an aging punk rocker, and he just throws himself around the stage. It was this very visceral, physical moment, and it was just incredible. It's left such an impression on me, and no concert has really impacted me the way that Iggy show did. Almost, I can't even calculate it, back in 1988.
A long time ago.
Wow, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, no doubt.
The other one for you, James, is let's say they're remaking Pretty Woman, and your cast is Edward, the Richard Gere character. What actress today would you want cast as Vivian Ward, who's played by Julia Roberts?
Iggy Pop.
Who would I cast as the hooker?
Yeah, your hooker.
You know, Meryl Streep. She can do no wrong in anything. Or Helen Mirren.
First time we heard Helen Mirren, but believe it or not, someone did mention Meryl Streep one other time. All right, so James is going to be sitting in on the entire Cinema Jaw. He has his five favorite prison movies of all time. Before we get there, it's a segment we call Eye for an Eye. Interested or ignore on a new movie opening up? James, you got to tell us if you're interested or ignore. And Eye for an Eye is sponsored by
the new 400 theaters.
Absolutely. And the best thing about the new 400 theaters, Matt?
Well, my personal opinion, Rye, the full-service liquor bar.
That's awesome. Full-service bar at a movie theater, and they have one of the best prices for first-run movies.
In the whole city of Chicago.
Yeah, so to check out what's playing at the New 400, check out their website at thenew400.com.
Pretty easy to remember.
Yep, and we thank them for their sponsorship of Cinema Jaw. Eye for an Eye, Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance. As Johnny Blaze hides out in Eastern Europe, he is called upon to stop the devil, who is trying to take human form. The movie stars the foolish Nick Cage and is directed by Mark Neveldine, who directed the first two Crank films. Matt, interested or ignore on the second Ghost Rider?
Interested.
Oh, come on!
Dude, I don't know. It's Marvel. Yeah, I gotta go.
Have you even seen the first Ghost Rider?
Yeah.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Boy, and you're still saying interested on this one?
I know. It was pretty bad, right?
Wow, that is rough.
Just something about a guy whose head catches on fire and, you know, like wears a biker jacket with chains and stuff.
All right, James, save us here. Interested or ignore on Ghost Rider?
I can't believe the pretense here. Of course I'm interested.
See,
he's
told you.
He's a comic book character. And like Matt said, his head's on fire. He wears a biker jacket. He whips some chains around. I think that is a formula for kick-assness.
Oh, I tell you, number one, it stars the foolish Nick Cage. And you'll remember, Matt, I had New Year's resolution that said I will see no movie starring Nick Cage this year. I'm giving Ghost Rider an ignore.
Rye, there is a lack of fun in your life.
Well, I tell you what, you guys are comic book fans, and that's what's suckering you into this crapper. But, Jawheads, you heard it here first. Two interesteds, one ignore for the second Ghost Rider. Now, before we get to our prison movies, I did get out to the theater and I caught a couple of small movies, but we need to call attention to these, Matt. The first one up is A Separation. This Iranian film has been racking up awards around the world and even landed at number one on Roger Ebert's top 10 of 2011.
Wow.
Finally, out here in Chicago in limited release, I was able to see if it lived up to all the hype. Matt, I am glad to report A Separation is worthy of all the praise. The story concerns a married couple who is contemplating moving to Europe so their daughter may have a better life, or stay and take care of the husband's aging father who has Alzheimer's disease. When the couple separate, the husband must hire a caretaker to take care of his father, which leads to an awful event between all the parties involved. The film then examines truth and how it is bent in all directions as each person feels they are in the right. In many ways, you can look at this as how a marriage or a relationship can deteriorate as well. Maybe because I'm not familiar with the actors in the movie, but this movie felt so real, like you were just spying in on a family. The acting is perfect. The screenplay is marvelous. This is a thought-provoking film that I hope everyone will seek out. Rye the Movie Guy's grade, 4 Jaws, a grade of an A.
He does not give those out lightly, James. I don't know if you've caught a couple of cinema jaws or not, but
James, have you heard of A Separation?
I haven't.
Oh, excellent film. Excellent. The other one I caught, another smaller film, is We Need to Talk About Kevin. I think the biggest Oscar snub of this year was the omission of Michael Fassbender for his performance in Shame. And now I feel that the second biggest Oscar snub of the year was not nominating Tilda Swinton for her performance in We Need to Talk About Kevin. The movie examines the relationship of a mother, played by Tilda Swinton, and her son Kevin. When first born, the mother-baby connection is not there, as she was not ready for motherhood at the time. We see how this has a profound effect on little Kevin as he grows up to do some evil actions in his teenage years. Tilda Swinton's performance is what makes this film so compelling. In this day and age, when we see teenagers commit some gruesome crimes, this is a brave look at what a mother of one of those kids goes through and even how they got to the breaking point to begin with. This is a difficult film to watch, but a powerful one at that. Ride the Movie Guy's grade on this one, 3.5 Jaws, a grade of a B+.
Is this sort of like a look into like a Columbine type thing?
Absolutely.
Sort of? Okay.
Yeah. If this movie had parents, it would definitely, one of them would be Columbine for sure.
Bowling for Columbine?
Yes. Yeah. But really, I mean, Tilda Swinton just carries the film just watching her because it's sort of flashbacks to present day after this has happened. And then also to the point when she first had her kid, she wasn't ready for motherhood. Not everything that goes into that, you know. Also in there is a great role by John C. Reilly, who plays the father. Really, really definitely check out We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Okay.
There's our two theater reviews. Neither of those had anything to do with prison, even though there was a small prison scene, and we need to talk about Kevin at the end. But that is our topic, our top five favorite prison movies.
I'm excited about this list.
Yeah, James, you got your list ready?
I got it right here.
All right. I'm excited to hear what James has to say. Now that he threw us for a curveball, denouncing The Dark Knight, this is going to be exciting.
Yeah, I'm surprised, man. I'm surprised about The Dark Knight. But, you know, as far as Valentine's Day goes, we could have gone with romantic comedies or chick flicks. But this is about prison, man. Get us started, Rye. What do you got?
At number five on the list, I have a movie that came out in 1999 and stars Tom Hanks. I'm talking about The Green Mile.
So low.
Yeah, number five. So many times in prison movies, it comes down to the likable characters that make the film work within the walls of the prison. This is true with The Green Mile, but it's mainly the guards who steal the show. Michael Clark Duncan plays John Coffey, a guy with a special gift, but he's accused of murdering the two childs. Tom Hanks is great in here, and also a fantastic supporting role by Sam Rockwell. I love The Green Mile. Came in at number five on my list.
What's the name of the mouse, Mr. Bojangles?
Yes, Mr. Yeah. Bojangles.
You've seen this one, James, right?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's a great movie. I'm actually shocked that it's kind of this low on your list.
Well, I got four ones that are even better than
you'd
that.
You'd better. You'd
All right.
better.
James, it swings us over to your number five.
I'm going with, I have a couple non-traditional choices that involve prison.
Hey, we like
I'm
that.
Going with the, I'm going with The Clockwork Orange for number five, which involves a great deal of incarceration and a seemingly successful attempt to reform a very, very bad man. And this is classic dystopian stuff. It's based on a book that came out in the early 1960s. And the movie is every bit as creepy, unsettling, and as upsetting as it was when it was first released at the end of that decade.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. That movie makes for a great late-night watch.
A little bit of the ultraviolence.
Yes. Good pick, James. Swings us over to Matt's number
Thanks.
Five.
All right, my number five, you know, I don't know if you guys have ever seen this movie or heard of it. 1992, biographical crime drama, pretty much takes place predominantly in prison. It's called American Me. Have you seen this one, James?
I have not.
Neither have I, Matt.
Really? Okay. So it has a lot to do with drugs and life in prison. It's about a Mexican gang leader. And as he comes out, he's trying to take control of his life and become reformed. But, you know, he sort of falls back on his old ways. It's a really, you know, it's up there with Requiem for a Dream as being difficult to watch. And there's some prison sex scenes. Of course, what prison movie wouldn't be complete without it that are very disturbing. This movie is actually, it's up there with my most disturbing movies of all time. So check out American Me. I think it's worthy of this list.
That could be your cue tip of the show right there.
I think
Put it
is.
On your cue. I like it.
I think it is.
Swings us into our number four, isn't it? Number four, I have a Clint Eastwood 1979, I would almost dare say masterpiece. I'm speaking of Escape from Alcatraz.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Yeah. It's based on the true story of the only, I guess, possible successful escape from Alcatraz, as they claim that the guy may have died. Eastwood plays Frank Morris, who actually used spoons to dig his way out of the prison. Love how they show the escape scene go down. They use like paper dummies to sort of prop up in the bed, so when the guards come by, they think that they're in bed, which is fantastic. And also, when I was out in San Francisco and I visited Alcatraz, it looks just so run down and just how it was back in the prison days. And they still have the cell that he escaped out of with the hole in the wall intact, and they just have it behind glass.
It's this tiny little hole, too.
I mean, very small.
Yeah.
And I saw this when I was a kid, and then after going to Alcatraz, right away when I got home, I was like, number one, I love always renting movies after a vacation of where I've been, and that was the first one I popped out, and wow, just awesome. I love Eastwood anyways, and Escape from Alcatraz, one of my favorites. Have you seen this one, James?
I have. That's a great movie. It is a classic. I almost went with that.
Nice. Well, it swings us over to your number four. What do you got sitting at four, James?
Well, let's stay on Alcatraz for a little bit.
Oh, boy.
Let's talk about Nick Cage.
Oh, no. Oh, let's not.
Let's talk about the Michael Bay classic, The Rock, with Sean Connery and Ed Harris in an underrated role.
Oh, he went there. Welcome to The Rock.
That is big, fun, dumb entertainment.
It sure is.
Yeah.
And Ed Harris is great in that movie.
I love Ed Harris in general. But yeah, Nick Cage, this was when he was just really rolling with the, he had this and Con Air and.
Oh yeah, no doubt. He was at high in his career. This is before he disappointed us. And as far as Ed Harris goes, name a bad Ed Harris movie.
True.
I mean, can you? It's tough, right?
Takes a little time.
The Rock, probably Sean Connery's last really good movie. I can't think of another one after that.
Sure.
So yeah, that's a worthy pick, man.
All right, we'll give it to you, James. We'll give it to you.
I'm trying to be non-honest. I'm trying to avoid Alcatraz and some of the things that I'm guessing you have on the way.
All right, swings us over to Matt's number four.
I got some classics here. I wanted to throw this one out. This is also kind of a sports movie. I'm going with The Longest Yard.
The remake, of course.
I hope not.
The Adam Sandler the 1974 original starring Burt Reynolds, sans mustache. Let that be known. This is really important because the mustache is actually his supporting actor.
Yeah, no doubt. The reason to rent this is to see him sans mustache.
Sans mustache, Burt Reynolds, man. I mean, I think this is probably his biggest sans mustache role.
Yeah, I did not see the remake, and I haven't seen The Longest Yard.
Oh, you didn't see the remake?
No. Have you seen it with him?
Yeah,
Sandler?
It's not terrible.
James, have you seen the remake? I bet you have.
What does that mean? I have seen it. It's not as good as the Burt Reynolds version, obviously.
Oh, that's good.
See, he's judging you because you like the Avengers.
No, I'm judging him because he likes The Rock.
Yeah.
you're like the indie purist of movies.
Yes.
It's like you're the guys who can quote Bon Iver lyrics just in movie form.
Oh, this is good stuff.
He's the hipster of film.
Hey, gets us to our number three. He's got to get us back on track here. Got to get us back on track. At number three, oh boy, this is a classic. I'm sure it's going to pop up on probably everybody's list. I'm speaking of the Steve McQueen masterpiece, Cool Hand Luke.
I'm so glad you have that on your list.
This came out in 1967. It solidified McQueen as the coolest screen legend of all time. I had not seen it until actually just a few years ago, maybe 5 years ago. But it was one of those that I had to see ever since I was a big Guns N' Roses fan, as I'm sure you were, James. That the line came up in Civil War.
Yeah.
What we've got here is a failure to communicate.
Yeah.
And everybody said, oh, that's from the movie Cool Hand Luke. And I was just a young kid. I thought, I got to see this movie. Finally saw it, and it's just so awesome. Steve McQueen, I think, at his absolute best.
See, I've never seen it. Now, they play poker in that movie, right?
They do.
Okay, so a lot of people have recommended this movie to me because I'm a huge poker player as well. So I got to see it.
Yeah, and plus there's a point where he is bet to see how many hard-boiled eggs he can eat at one time. And he just puts down an absolute ton amount that he says he can eat. And he sort of gains the respect of all the prisoners on the chain gang at that point. And it's just awesome. You familiar, James?
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Jawheads at home. If you haven't seen Cool Hand Luke, pause the podcast and put it on. James, swings us over to your number three.
I'm so glad you talked about prison sex earlier. a movie that left a lasting, disturbing impression on me is also based on a book that left a lasting, disturbing impression on me, Midnight Express. When you think about the country of Turkey, This is the movie or story that kind of defines it for a lot of Americans. Life in a Turkish prison, William Hayes, yeah. caught at the border trying to smuggle out a bunch of hashish. He learned that the prison system in Turkey, not as hospitable as the awful prison system in the United States.
And that's saying a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're so right about that, too, James. I worked with a gentleman, a Turkish guy, Jalal Ersoy, if he's listening to this by chance. Hi. But it was so funny because the only thing I knew was the Turkish prison lines was the only thing I knew about Turkey.
So as soon as he told you he was from Turkey, you were just like, oh, Midnight Express.
Yes, absolutely.
Prison sex. You know, I'm a big fan of the, it's not a remake, it just happens to have the same title, The Midnight Express. Oh, no, that's Midnight Run with Robert De Niro and Charles
yes,
Grodin.
Midnight Run.
Yeah, no, different movie altogether.
Good pick, James. Swings us over to Matt's number three.
Again, I'm kind of sticking to the classics. I'm glad you guys haven't had this one on your list so far. Jack Nicholson, 1975, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. What?
I don't think
what?
It's a prison movie.
Why are you
criminal?
Yeah, but it's more of a hospital movie. That's why I gave you the buzz.
Wait, no. It's a mental institution, man. That's incarceration. They're there against their will.
I know, but all right, I'll give it to you.
Okay, so there's no bars. It's more like the white lab coats and everything, but that can be even more frightening than real prison, you know? I don't know. I mean, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is...
Don't get me wrong. I absolutely love the film. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, Nurse
I just
Ratched.
Never think of it in my head as like when I'm talking prison movies, I don't think of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, but I like that you did.
It's a little bit of a stretch, perhaps. I don't know. James, what do you think on this one?
I actually thought about that one. It's one of the greatest movies ever.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I would have it probably in my top 10 of all time. But
yeah,
for
it's
me,
up there
I don't know
me.
Why it didn't jump out as a prison movie. But, now considering, I guess you're right, Matt.
It's the mental institution, so.
I only hope that DeVito can match that performance with the Lorax.
I'm already sick of those previews for the Lorax. All right, swings us over to our number twos. And this movie, actually, I just watched and was the reason I said let's do prison movies because I saw this film and I thought, I got to bring it up. I was going to do a Rise Hidden Gem for it. The name of the film is called Hunger, and it came out in 2008. And it reteams Michael Fassbender and director Steve McQueen, who just teamed up and gave a Shame this year, which was my movie of the year. And Fassbender plays Bobby Sands, IRA member who leads a hunger strike while in prison in 1981. This was based on a true story to regain political status by the British government. This is one of the grittiest looks at prison life of all time. I mean, they rub their feces all over the wall. They refuse to wear prison clothes because they want to be regarded as prisoners of war. And so there's a lot of full frontal nakedness while men are being beat up. I'm telling you, if you want a
it's one to watch with the parents, then, is what you're saying?
No, don't.
Put it on with the in-laws when they're...
Very, very gritty film. But at one point, too, to give you an idea, there is a conversation between Fassbender and a priest who comes to visit him. And Steve McQueen, who this is not the great Steve McQueen. This was an artist-turned director, Steve McQueen. He literally put the camera up on basically a tripod, didn't move it at all, for a 17-minute conversation between two people. There's no cuts or anything. It's just sort of the two-shot of them.
Wow.
And it worked beautifully. Watching some of the extras on the disc really made me think, like, going back to rewatch the scene, exactly what they were talking about, sort of silhouette. And it wasn't necessarily the characters talking as much was what they represented, and brilliant, brilliant film. Highly, highly recommend Hunger. James, I don't know if you've seen this one.
Wait, I got a comment here. James, and forgive me if I'm drinking Rye's film hipster Kool-Aid here, but the more I learn about Fassbender, the more I question, why the hell did he do Magneto? I mean, like, this guy is a serious, like, art film.
Well, you know what it was?
Well, why did Patrick Stewart play Captain Picard? Incredible actors with skill can play those pop roles.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, especially when it's a well-written character like Magneto was. And this film, it should be noted, Hunger, was sort of the movie that broke Fassbender out. It wasn't a big movie as far as breaking him out to the general public.
Sure.
But it was huge with filmmakers in general. People, I've seen interviews with him where he said that was the movie that all these other filmmakers saw me in that got me out. And at one point, they cut when he's on the last days of his hunger strike. He was down to, like, I want to say something like 130 pounds, and he's a tall man. He's just skin and bones, and just a fantastic ending, powerful movie. Put it on the queue if you haven't seen it. Hunger, it's Rye's hidden gem. James, we swing you over to your number two.
This is kind of a stretch, too, probably, but it's a movie that starts with a prison break. And it's one of my favorite movies of the 1990s, hands down. It's a movie, Steven Soderbergh movie called Out of Sight. It was a breakout moment for Jennifer Lopez, and it was one of George Clooney's, to date, finest moments on film. Clooney's a bad guy on the run, and over time, Jennifer Lopez, the agent out to get him, is kind of seduced by his charms, and it's just a terrific movie.
Are you a fan of Jennifer Lopez, though, James? It sounded like you were right there.
In that movie, I thought she was great. I mean, things she's done since, maybe not so much, but I thought she was absolutely fantastic in that movie.
Yeah, she really started off pretty good. She was also in that movie, Selena.
And she was in Cell, too.
The Cell,
right?
Yeah.
Cell. And all those movies, she had a lot of promise. But I'm just so annoyed with her lately. I'll have to go back and watch that movie. I haven't seen it in a long time.
Well, she's taken a lot of garbage roles, for sure. But, yeah, I mean, you're right, Rye. At the beginning, she had a lot of promise. And this is one of the ones that I agree with you, James. Probably J-Lo at her finest.
No doubt. Good pick. Swings us over to Matt's number two.
My number two, you know what? Rye, you already mentioned it, so we can gloss over it. The Green Mile. Our introduction to Michael Clark Duncan, like we mentioned, Tom Hanks, of course. It's a great movie. It's probably, well, like I said, it's my number two prison movie of all time.
Yeah, written by Stephen King, which yeah. I think he's going to come up here in our number ones. I did not put The Shawshank at number one. I have a film that is truly, truly excellent film that just came out in 2009, and it's actually a French film. It's called Prophet. A Prophet. James, have you seen this by chance?
No.
All right.
See, he's the film hipster.
I'm telling you, this was nominated for Best Foreign Film at the Oscars that year, and it really did get a lot of publicity here because people started comparing it to sort of part Godfather, part Shawshank Redemption. And if that doesn't get your attention,
that's bold.
Right there. It starts off with like a 19-year-old guy who is sentenced to prison. And early on, he's actually asked to, in the jail by sort of like the mob boss in the jail, to kill his bunkmate who's, in his cell with him. Because that guy had witnessed a crime that somebody else had done.
Sure.
And it's very tense. And this whole thing leads up for about a half hour into the movie, just this one scene and how he's going to go about killing him. But from that point on, this guy that we follow along ends up becoming sort of the mob guy of the prison. He starts playing both sides. So you see it's sort of like The Godfather. He sort of becomes the godfather of the prison sentence, but it has that prison feel like a Shawshank Redemption at the same time.
Yeah.
He gets out on the weekends because he has, good behavior, and they allow him to leave the prison for a while, and he starts doing some business on the outside of the prison. He's got stuff going on the inside. Wow. That's all I can say. A Prophet. I'm telling you, you'll love it, Matt. Even though it's a French film and you got to read some subtitles, absolutely fantastic.
That's probably your Q tip of the day right there.
There it is. A Prophet was my number one. Swings us over to James. What do you got?
Yeah, I used the word dystopia earlier with Clockwork Orange. I love dystopian movies, those movies where the government kind of assumes control and it's the very opposite of a utopia. One of my top 10 favorite movies of all time is my favorite prison-related movie. In this movie, the entire city of New York is turned into a prison. It is
yes.
A pop culture, pop trash gem. It is Escape from New York from 1981, starring Kurt Russell, Donald Pleasance, Isaac Hayes as the Duke from New York. This is big fun, and like I said, it's got that dystopian, like the government is just diabolical, and they control you, feel to it. I love this movie. I never turn it off when it's on.
It's so fantastic. Isn't Kurt Russell just a badass in there?
He's got an eye patch that says badass.
I agree. I haven't seen it in a long time, but boy, when I was younger, everybody loved this movie.
Yeah, no, I love the movie. It's no Overboard as far as...
Why'd you have to go there? But did you see the sequel, Escape from L.A.?
Yeah, that was awful.
We shouldn't have mentioned it.
Yeah, unfortunate. But the original stands, man. The original stands.
Yeah, great pick. I wasn't even thinking. I love when people go outside the box. I didn't even think of that as a prison movie. Fantastic. Swings us over to Matt's number one.
Is there any doubt in anybody's mind? I mean, there's an elephant in this freaking room here, guys. I mean, if you're talking about prison movies, the number one pick, clearly, The Shawshank Redemption. You're just lying to yourselves. You are. You're just lying to yourselves. The Shawshank Redemption is the greatest prison movie of all time, probably one of the greatest movies of all time, period.
It's absolutely fantastic. No arguments here. Number one, I'll just say this. I left it off the list because I thought either A, it was a given that it was going to be
a
number one,
yeah.
Or that someone else in the room here would have a... Number one, Shawshank.
You know what? Right. I thought about doing the same exact thing. I dug deep. I'm like, well, everybody's going to have Shawshank as their number one, so I probably shouldn't. But really, seriously, it is the number one. I would have felt like I did something wrong if I didn't have it at my number one. So I'm glad that I stuck to my guns on this. Shawshank Redemption, best prison film of all time.
You as big a fan as Matt and me, James?
I think it's a great movie. I avoided it for the same reason. I thought, well, that's too obvious, but you know, it's a great movie. So I went with Escape from New York instead.
Nice.
See, I'm always willing to take one for the team and go the obvious route.
I love it.
Somebody's got to do it.
Hey, those were our top five prison movies. If we miss one and you got Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. Let us know what your favorite prison movie was. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we got a CinemaJaw poll question, Cinema War, and then we finish up with Matt against James Van Osdell in movie trivia. So we'll see how we can do. We'll be right back on CinemaJaw.
Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a CinemaJaw movie fact. Regarding the movie Shawshank Redemption, the mugshots of a young-looking Morgan Freeman that are attached to his parole papers are actually pictures of Morgan's younger son, Alfonso Freeman. Alfonso had a cameo in the movie, as a con, shouting, fresh fish today, we're reeling them in! And that is your CinemaJaw movie fact.
And we are back on CinemaJaw, hanging out with James Van Osdell via Skype. And it brings us to an interesting segment here, CinemaJaw poll question we threw out to the fans. As we know, George Lucas has re-released the Episode 1, Phantom Menace, into theaters in 3D. And so it got us thinking to throw this poll question out there. We asked our fans, what is the worst part of Star Wars Episode 1? Jake Lloyd, Jar Jar Binks, or the mention of Metachlorians? James, what would you say out of those three? What would you vote for?
Oh, God, how do you pick one? I'm going with Jar Jar.
Very annoying, that Jar Jar. Matt, what do you got?
The midichlorians.
Nice.
Totally ruined the Force. It's supposed to be, you know, an ancient religion, and all of a sudden it's a science project.
That is also where I casted my vote. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't like Jar Jar. I find him highly annoying. Jake Lloyd was just terrible, beyond terrible. But for some reason, the mention of midichlorians is just... You're right. It takes the fun out of the whole idea of the Force. You don't need to know the science behind the Force.
Right.
I mean, what next? Is he going to tell us how long you got to charge a lightsaber before it works for an epic battle? I don't need to know that kind of stuff. Let's just have fun with it. Now, we asked our fans, Twitter, Facebook, and they came back. Actually, 48% of CinemaJaw, the Jawheads, said Jar Jar Binks was the most was the worst part of it. 35% said Jake Lloyd, and 17% did come in and say the Metachlorians. Plus, we had a few comments. What do we have, Matt?
All right, Mike Huff said all of the above.
Absolutely.
Which is probably the right answer. Jason Diebel said, I concur. It sucked from front to back. More difficult question. What was the best thing about Star Wars 1, Phantom Menace? I would go with Darth Maul. Have to agree with Jason Diebel on that. Jen Barnes said, the really bad acting of little Annie, so yeah.
Yeah, no doubt.
Lloyd. And Keith Johnson, all of the above.
Yeah, I think all of the above.
Yeah, that would have won hands down.
No doubt about it. So tweet us. Let us know what you think of Episode 1 being in theaters. Brings us to a segment we call...
Cinema War.
And Cinema War is sponsored by MoviePass. Get an unlimited amount of movies in theater and save $15 by entering CinemaJaw in as the promotional code.
This is so huge, Rye. I mean, seriously, you go to a lot of movies in the theater, right?
I do.
James, do you go to a lot of movies in the theater?
Absolutely.
So wouldn't you love, I mean, you know, I'm putting you on the spot, to just subscribe to a service where you can just pay like one low monthly cost and go to as many movies in the theater as you want?
Sounds spectacular.
It does. And it is. MoviePass, use the promo code CinemaJaw, save $15 off your plan.
Yeah, and you can find it at the Facebook page for CinemaJaw and also at our website. And we thank MoviePass for their sponsorship of CinemaJaw.
Yeah, and we should mention our website is CinemaJaw.com.
Absolutely. So brings us to a segment we call Cinema War. And this week, because he's got a new movie coming out, we sort of focused on Denzel Washington and James Van Osdell. You got to play judge and jury and let us know if you think Matt Kay or Rye the Movie Guy wins this argument. Reno, tell the Jawheads at home what today's Cinema War topic is.
Tonight's Cinema War topic is, with his new movie opening, Safe House, is Denzel Washington a great actor or is he overrated? Rye, you'll be fighting that he's great. Matt, you'll be fighting that he's overrated. Let the cinema war begin.
It's as simple as this, Matt. Denzel Washington is one of our generation's finest actors. He has 2 Academy Awards for his roles in Glory and Training Day, and he was robbed of a 3rd for Malcolm X.
This is the height of mediocrity. I mean, yeah, he's got a couple of good roles, but for every good movie that Denzel puts out, he's got 3 duds: Unstoppable, The Mighty Quinn, etc., etc. I want to like him. I really do, but I just can't.
I'll tell you one word, Matt. Longevity. What am I trying to say?
Longevity.
Longevity, damn it, Matt. Longevity in Hollywood is tough to find. Denzel has it. Started his career in 1982 on TV with St. Elsewhere. 30 years later and some 36 feature films, he's still putting out quality work and is a major draw at the box office.
He's a jobber, man. I mean, I hate this guy in Training Day, and it's not because I don't like his character. It's his performance. I just can't get behind it, man. I mean, it's very contrived from Denzel.
No, Matt. Another major thing with Denzel is he's versatile. He can play the action hero, as in the case with The Book of Eli, Deja Vu, The Bone Collector. He can also do serious fare, like Philadelphia, The Hurricane, and Glory, or play the villain, like in Training Day, American Gangster, and this upcoming Safe House.
Oh, you busted out the filmography. Denzel, what have you done for me lately? The Book of Eli? Not enough. If I wanted another end-of-the-world movie, I'll rewatch 2012.
Tough crowd. Lastly, Matt, he puts his star power behind films that he believes in, and if he didn't, we may not see powerful stories like The Hurricane or Remember the Titans, and in some cases, he even directs them. He has directed both The Great Debaters and Antoine Fisher, both must-see films from Ride the Movie Guy.
I think he puts his weight behind a paycheck, man. Listen, Denzel has had some good roles, there's no doubt about it, but overall, I think the guy is pretty one-dimensional, overrated to the max. There's just no star quality to him, and again, I want to like him, but he just leaves me high and dry every time.
Wow, tough crowd. We're at a deadlock here, James, as you can see. We throw it over to our judge and jury. What'd you think of this cinema war?
No star quality for Denzel? I think you're nuts. Denzel is a star's star. Even in the movies that suck that he's in, like The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, I think he's fantastic. And you mentioned movies like Philadelphia and Glory. I think he's a major talent. I think he's a major actor. And to dismiss his entire body of work, I think is short-sighted.
Sounds like Ryan the Movie Guy won this one. Is that correct,
James? That's what it is. That is correct.
Thank you, James. Thank you.
Damn you, Rye.
All right. So we agree, me and James, that Denzel Washington, one of the greats of our generation. Brings us to trivia this week. Let me remind the jawheads at home, Matt is 0-3 this year to start off 2012. James, because the Oscars are coming up, we are tying this in with the Oscars of 2011, and we're playing Oscar tagline movie trivia.
Oh, my God.
All the taglines I read are from movies that are nominated at this year's Academy Awards.
I'm dead. Forget it. I concede.
I don't know, dude.
Don't say that.
Yeah, don't say that. Remember, now, I just poo-pooed Denzel Washington, so.
Now we go back and forth. There are steals. If you don't know it, the other person gets a chance. And you do have one lifeline. Our producer, Reno, will help you out with a clue. You just got to say, "Rescue me, Reno," and he'll come to your rescue. James, you're our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first.
I'll go first.
All right. Question number one, over to James. Should say tagline number one. And the tagline is, "What are you really worth?"
Moneyball.
1-0, James.
Wow.
Well
done. Comes out swinging.
Well done, James. Question number two, or again, tagline number two, over to Matt K. The feel-bad movie of Christmas.
The feel-bad movie of Christmas.
Now, these could be nominated in any category, mind you. It's not just best pictures or anything. So, the feel-bad movie of Christmas.
Hangover 2.
That came out way earlier in the year. James, you got a chance for a steal and blow this thing wide open. The feel-bad movie of Christmas.
I got nothing.
We were looking for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Really? That was the tagline?
Yes.
That's a terrible tagline.
Rooney Mara, obviously starring in there, is nominated for Best Actress. Question number three.
The feel-bad movie of Christmas.
Over to James. And the tagline is, never compromise. Never compromise.
Never compromise.
You do have a lifeline if you want to use it.
Yeah, give me a lifeline.
Rescue Me Reno, question number three. The tagline is, never compromise.
And your clue is, not a sequel to Iron Man.
Not a sequel to Iron Man. Iron Man. Oscar trivia taglines.
I got nothing. I don't know.
Matt, you got a chance for a steal.
The Iron Lady.
He ties it up at one.
I didn't even know that was a movie.
Yes, The Iron Lady starring Meryl Streep.
It's Iron Man's Fuck sister.
All right, question number four is over to Matt. And the tagline is, it all ends.
I'm just picturing Meryl Streep in the Iron Man armor. the little lid comes up on her helmet, and it's Meryl Streep in there, and she's Margaret Thatcher. What's the tagline? The
tagline for this question is, it all ends.
It all ends. Harry Potter, part two, or there's seven, part two, whatever.
Nice. 2-1, Matt K. 2-1, Matt K. James, you can still come back strong here. Oh, boy, this is a tough one. Separated by war, tested by battle, bound by friendship.
Warhorse?
That was actually kind of an easy one.
2-2. 2-2. Well done, James. Throw it over to Matt. This tagline reads, at the height of the Cold War, only a master spy could be trusted to expose one of their own.
Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
3-2. I thought, Matt, no way you were getting that.
I haven't seen the movie.
Throw it over to question number seven, over to James. And the tagline is, change begins with a whisper. Oscar-nominated film, Change Begins with a Whisper.
Oh, my God. I don't know.
Matt, you got a chance for a steal.
What's the score?
3-2, you. Change Begins with a Whisper.
Rescue Me, Reno.
Rescue Me, Reno. Question seven. Tagline was, change begins with a whisper.
And your clue is, I'm no help on this question.
Oh, come on.
Hey, blame the producer.
Whoa, that's... Wait. Is it The Help?
4-2.
That was a really easy clue. That was an easy clue.
Hey, the last question of the game, James, over to you, was this one. Mankind's finest achievement, our nation's proudest moment, a secret hidden for 40 years.
God, I hope it's Captain America, but I'm sure it's not.
No. Matt, you anything on that one?
Say it again.
Mankind's finest achievement, our nation's proudest moment, a secret hidden for 40 years.
I got nothing.
That was actually Transformers Dark of the Moon.
Get out of here.
Nominated for Best Special Effects and Sound Editing and so forth. Yeah, there you go.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey, before we finish this jaw up, we got a couple of Hollywood headlines.
Yeah, James, feel free to chime in on these. I'll take the first one here. Robert Rodriguez is teaming with producer Alexander Rodnansky to hatch a sequel to the 2010 action film Machete, titled Machete Kills. The film is second in a planned trilogy.
Hey, I was a big fan of Machete. I usually don't like those kind of movies, but I like this one. I welcome a sequel.
I'm in, yeah, man.
James, have you seen Machete?
I haven't.
Oh, good one. Hey, get a load of this one, guys. Natural selection director Robbie Pickering has been tapped to direct vampire zombie alien mashup The Kitchen Sink for Sony Pictures. I've never heard of The Kitchen Sink.
I haven't either. Vampire, alien, zombie, what?
Yeah, it's a mashup of vampire, zombie, and alien.
I'm in.
It sounds just like your kind of movie, James.
Completely.
Last one, Matt.
Mine too, James. Mine too, sir. Steve Martin's latest novel to hit bookshelves is headed to the big screen. None other than Amy Adams will take the lead in An Object of Beauty. Described as a sardonic morality tale, the story follows Lacey Yeager, an art entrepreneur who sleeps and schemes her way to the top.
I was a huge fan of Steve Martin's other film that he had wrote, Shop Girl.
Shop Girl.
Big fan. Steve Martin's such a treasure.
He is a treasure. He's a great writer. Obviously, he's a fantastic comedic talent. High hopes.
Yeah.
Wait, you say great writer. Have you read his autobiography?
Have I read his autobiography? No, I haven't. I've read Shop Girl.
The autobiography actually turned me off of Steve Martin. And I grew up watching him, but I found him to be really self-indulgent, full of himself, and not too funny.
Really?
Interesting. I'd like to read his autobiography. You know what? You're not the first person to tell me that he's a bit of a D-bag in real life.
Kind of.
I follow him on Twitter, and he's pretty funny on Twitter.
It's not hard to be funny on Twitter, Rye.
True.
It's only 120 characters, you know.
Well, I'm excited for that movie. I'm glad, I guess, they're not making a movie based on his autobiography.
Yeah. Well, so, James, would you watch the movie based on his latest novel?
I don't know. Are there robots in it?
There are some aliens and some zombies and some vampires.
Oh, yeah. I'd see that.
Okay, cool.
All right. Hey, it brings us to the end of a great cinema job. James Van Osdo, we got to thank you for coming on.
My pleasure.
This has been a blast. And for all the jawheads at home, where's the best place to catch this new podcast with Steve Dahl and such?
Dahl.com, D-A-H-L.com.
And as far as people who want to keep in touch with you and follow you, your Twitter handle, something like that?
Yeah, my name, James Van Osdo.
Also on Facebook.
Yep.
No, not on Facebook. Facebook's for girls.
Yes, that's right. Just a Twitter
that's
guy.
Right.
I like it. James, thanks again for coming on. We want to thank our sponsors, the new 400.
Yep, Movie Pass.
Absolutely. Best sponsors you can have. And also our wonderful producer, Steve Mrazek.
Best in the biz.
Absolutely. So until next week, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movies.
See ya.